Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, January 26th, 2016. This is hour 298 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and returned to Maui with our amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharoon using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello. Well, welcome back. And we can start right off with Kathleen. 11 January, she writes, thanks and questions. She says, hi, Curtis and Michael. Michael, I wanted to let you know that I really appreciated your look ahead into the year 2016 that you did in podcast 295. I must admit that I have about given up on politics due to all the deception and lies. I know that the Most Highs rule in the affairs of men, and you have given me hope in the prospect that Donald Trump may be a tool of the divine. Thank you so much for that new perspective. And then she continues, Curtis, I've written out a transcript of Michael's and your conversation on this, and I'll be sending that on to you to put up on the listen page if you like. I would like to ask the Shaharoons if they can offer any insight on another unusual experience that I had on the evening of the last blood moon on Sunday, the 27th of September, 2015. I was out taking pictures, waiting to get some pictures of the rising moon, when off to my right, I glimpsed what I can only describe as a tall, maybe 10-foot, shadow being. It seemed that as I looked at him, he was about 20 to 25 feet away from me. He started to move extremely quickly. I just automatically moved my camera toward him to take his picture, and it was at this time that the flash of my camera just stopped working. It broke. Needless to say, I didn't get a picture. I've been thinking about this experience a while, and I'm now thinking that this being may have been a midwayer. The Urantia book described them as electric beings, and they can control physical objects. So that would explain my broken camera. Anyway, I'd really appreciate any insight the Shaharoons could offer on this experience and the midwayers in general. Many thanks to you all. Love and joy, Kathleen. And then a few days later, she wrote and she said that she saw a video. Here, let me move up a little bit. She said, hi, Curtis and Michael, and the subject is passenger plane photos, shadow figure. I just ran across this recent article, and it reminds me a bit of the figure that I saw on the night of the last blood moon. Here are the pictures from that article, an article found here, and I have a link on the listen page. You can see it. And the caption, she said, I found the images so interesting that I just wanted to send them on to you. Thanks for all you do. Love and joy, Kathleen. And I don't have a picture on here, but there's a link on here, and under the caption it says, an extraordinary picture captured by a plane passenger at 30,000 feet shows what looks like a huge robot walking along the clouds. And you can see this being and also his shadow on the clouds. So I'll leave you with that. I guess you didn't see the picture, did you, Michael?
Actually, that was also posted on Coast to Coast.
Oh, yes?
Yeah. So there's a lot of people that saw that. And interesting picture. I did see it. And it looks like a very dark figure casting a shadow of all things onto the surface of the cloud. So you're actually, you know, at the typical cruise altitude, 30,000 plus feet in the air, looking down onto a cloud bank, and he's what appears to be a humanoid figure, dark in color, but apparently, you know, having a cloud about it. So that's an interesting picture, and it could be very well a midway or trying to escape the planet.
They really? Escape the planet?
They cannot escape the planet. But they're stuck here for quite a while. But,
so you think it was a midware?
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. But, you know, one of the things about the midwares, as they've been, you know, known throughout time, and you can tell from folklore and stuff that they were dealing with midwares, even for those who were terrified of their poltergeist-like activity, you know. And there are others who were actually able to slam, you know, literally lift a person up and throw them against the wall. These things were happening, and they were big beings, you know, but they're apparently are able to do physical, you know, things in our space and cause some trouble. And in the area of the cloud where you're seeing this, somebody took that picture. If it's not a Photoshop job, but what could it explain it is that explanation of the Irancha book calls the midwayers are electrical nature, beings of electrical nature, not like beings of light, but beings of an electrical nature. And of course, much of electricity is not seen directly. Much of the luminescence we see, like in a fluorescent bulb, is an indirect action of the electrical charge and ionization of a, you know, electrified gas, similar to, you know, the activity of aurora in terms of out in our stratospheric or ionospheric area. When it comes down to looking at this on the cloud surface, there are times when there are actual physical movement of, you know, like a jet aircraft through a cloud, that it would leave a physical trail because of the dynamics of its pressure that moves the wind. But in a static environment, in an environment of electrical nature, charged particles tend and can group around a attractive static type body, and that's one of the reasons we get precipitation. It's because of static. Some people say that air can no longer hold, you know, because of temperature, and that's part of static electricity. The moisture that it is, then it becomes condensation. But in the upper areas of the clouds, you can actually see, because in my trips many times up to the top of Haleakala, I travel through the cloud bank. And it's kind of neat to, you know, go literally drive through the clouds, open your windows and breathe in the air. It's nice. Negative ionized air, which is good for the health, but also to see the effect of other things. Sometimes I tried to do some experiments with radio energy, see if it would create any difference in cloud motion, and it not very observable. Didn't seem to see any interaction. But in the area of perhaps midware, who may be able to develop a type of attractive energy, clouds may actually form around them and take the shape of what they are. So a humanoid form is an interesting factor, a legacy of how the midwares came to be, because they were created. You got a cat meowing over there?
Yeah, Cassie Boy's dreaming.
Cassie Boy. Yeah. Well, the activity of some of these earlier extraterrestrial beings, you might call them, that came to the planet and did jump the gun. Essentially, they were not of Earth, and then were imbued with a, you might say, a privilege of mortality, of being immortal, which is to have procreative ability. But in their procreative action, you might call it lovemaking or whatever it was, a secondary aspect happened besides just the physical aspect of being able to have children or offspring, was that a midware appeared, probably by the interaction of their base electrical nature, which was the primary way by which they were transported here. And the fact was that a group of primary midwares came into being. And these were primarily the composite between two who are now known as the fallen race, fallen angels. Later, under the Adamic influence, when Adam and Eve were brought forward to actually do the real work of, you might say, upstepping humanity genetically, there was a secondary group that came forth. And this group wasn't supposed to necessarily come forth either, but what had happened was under the secondary group, much of the secondary group became faithful followers of the first source and center, and have done a lot in terms of many of the what we see as miracles happening. Yet the negative influence of what was the first group, the primary group, remains, and they are sowing much of the discord and discontent in planet. Received, I'm going to reveal a little bit what had happened to us. We were recording earlier, and the recording didn't work, right, Curtis?
Yeah, I had some kind of snag with it. I go back and listen to what you said again, and it helps me title the recording. And somehow the loop thing went haywire. So I said, well, let me just close the whole thing out. And so we recorded 29 minutes, but your voice wasn't there.
And that would have been Shaharon's voice, too.
Yes, and yes. Shaharon.
Who was giving insight. One of the things he was giving insight, I'm just doing a introduction to what he was talking about. But he had pretty much started to reveal the trickery of the negative primary midwares who are able to use their energies to distort our perception of each other by manipulating emotions. And you remember that part he was talking about? How
yes.
they can change our, because of the electrochemical nature of emotions, they are able to influence sometimes our thought process, but not logically. In other words, they don't come to you and try to logically persuade you through one way or another by, you know, by conversing. Instead, they use the, you know, Shanoans is saying they will use their energies to impute negative, but they lead a person's mind down experiential paths with somebody or something to destroy or disrupt the good flow of divine energy in the individual. They want to interrupt. They want to render inert the divine voice. And how they do that is simply by, you might say, cultivating negative energy in terms of negative emotion. There are times in which they have a certain level of psychic power, like telepathy in a way, and suggest a type of accusation, and that brings forth memory. Psychologists talk about negative things like depression. Sometimes the cycle of depression, which is this repetitive, self-reinforcing cycle of negative thought, that is sometimes brought about by a midwayer's activity in a person's life. And that can become very, very disruptive, because once an individual becomes attached to such a being, they tend to want to stay with it because they can toy around with the individual, and they can continue in their, you might say, nefarious ways in which they can try to disrupt society in general. Much of what goes on in terms of the polluted and negative forces of Islam today are perpetuated and propagated by such beings who found much of their energy in the Middle East. And as a fact, much of their origin in the Middle East. So they are not limited in lifespan also. So they tend to become very experienced in manipulating the human mind by manipulating human emotion. And then this is something that we as individuals, human beings, can become open to, or we can be attacked essentially by their accusations, and then reversing their effect in our lives through emotional stimulation, they can actually create a negative individual. This is done through the, you might say, the negative cycle of accusation and hatred and negative emotion. And they will be propagated from them, but they will use particular personal events and memories or even teachings to create this cycle. So the ones who are able to overcome this will recognize negative as being a divisive tool of these individuals and try to limit these negative things as much as possible. But at the instant of being able to find their divisiveness in an individual's life or mind, at that very instant, having the divine voice speak, change happens. And then many times that cycle is broken that they impute. They use fear in another way too. And fear many times is a game to them. And moving things around and stuff like that. And that's the poker geist type apparition.
Mm.
Yeah. And that is another play on them. But it is not as effective a tool that used by the more evil, you might say, nefarious types of midwares who try to manipulate humanity away from ascending, you know, because they're fallen already. They've been judged by their own fallenness. They stay away. But there are another group, which is called the Secondary Order, who are the faithful ones, and again, who are applying their energies uplift humanity toward the divine nature. And many of these miracles are genuine because they help bring it about. But they need the energies, the inflow of the divine Holy Spirit, you might say, to, you know, create the, it's like, if there's no power in the power grid, I don't care how many times you flip the switch to turn your light on, the light's not going to go on. So essentially the Holy Spirit, or that energy that flows in the power grid, is like the Holy Spirit. But the flipping of the switch many times is something that these midwares are capable of doing. So the midwares who are, you know, you might say friendly, amiable types.
What do you mean, Michael, by flipping it? The midwares are able to flip a switch.
Yeah, which can be in terms of many, many things, whether it be the physical realm, where, let's say a person has a need of type of physical healing, let's say a cancer has taken hold of them. What they have within their grasp is many times the switch that is needed to allow for healing energy to go through the body and actually supercharge the body's normal immune response against something like a cancer. And that's where you see these regressions happen, to the point where, wow, you know, it's like nothing. It's nothing there. It's like a healing. But, you know, when I looked at the fact that many of the midwares are electrical in nature, and find that much of healing is electrical in nature, but yet requires, you might say, the opening, like the ability to create that opening and allow the energy to flow of willing or human or interaction of a sentient being. So they've been very very helpful in terms of once allowing the energies to flow will create the environment for both the supercharging of the normal immune response, but actually sometimes taking in dilations in time space to speed it up. So it appears to have been done in a very quick time. You know, not necessarily instantly, but really very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's generally does not fall into a point where you know, something that shouldn't happen, you know, couldn't happen, happens, such as something like what's happened right now. I was almost going to use the idea that if somebody cut their finger off and it'll be growing back the next day, but there's already been experiments done that have actually allowed for the regrowth of fingertips and things like that. Fingers, actually, one was a finger, but it was using both electrical and some other genetic infusion type of material that they, once they put it on, it caused something like a like natural development in the womb of, you know, growing from a fetus into a baby. That similar effect took place in a localized area of need, which was the fingertip. So the fingertip grew back. Now, this would look miraculous, but it's already been done by our own scientists right now. But but something like that, if that were to happen without outward intervention by our own physicians or something, who are experimenting with that technique, I think it could run awry in that technique and may actually become negative in a sense, but become cancerous. But the thing about the miracles that can happen and do happen are commonly related to the nervous system and the healing of the nervous system. This is one of the ones in which is the most common miracles to see, was the lame to walk. The people who got problems, all of a sudden they couldn't walk, they had physical disability. There's a grove, I forgot the name of the grove. It's a famous grove in Europe someplace. I don't know if it's related to the forgot the name of them too. This grove, I remember, is literally covered in old crutches. And there's an account of that, similar events happening in the Bible, where there was a man who was paralyzed, who was kind of couldn't, they would carry him to a pool in beside it's like you got to walk down into like a well area. But they would wait until the water, which is still generally, it's like a very calm artesian spring, And when it bubbled and churned a bit, then whoever walked into that, got into it, was healed. That bubbling and churning was an evidence that there was a midwife who would occasionally try to inspire the human consciousness about the higher realm and about a higher destiny and try to get that message across. And it would take the form of a miraculous healing. But Jesus Christ, in his time, did know the fact and applied the miracle cure. And the paralytic did, you know, take up his bed and walk. This has been done over and over again through time. Whether it be in the grove, I think St. Lucia's Grove, I'm not sure that's the name. But this has been done. Many of these good things have been done because of the faithful midwives. So there's a group of negative and a group of faithful. Primary is the first group wasn't so good. They often toyed around with keeping humanity in the level of superstition and suppressing civilization. And in the reverse sense, incurring a level of pointless development of society away from the divine purpose. That would be done through the acquisition of gain. The old concept of the great farmer who had great success, and they asked him what he would do, and he said, "Oh, I'm just going to build even bigger barns, even greater." And he says, "Thou fool, you know, this day your life be required of you. You haven't been building toward the right goal." And this is something that is oftenly confused in terms of people's lives. But many times these guys are just playing games. They're, to them, it's a game, many of them who are negative. The side of those who are the secondary midwife group who are faithful, they realize that their destiny off-planet is to raise humanity to a higher level, and which will also free them to explore the extra realm of the universe, and giving them a gateway off-planet. Did I just say that kind of the first thing that I thought was, oh, there's a midwife trying to escape the planet, was walking on the clouds? But, you know, yeah. Could very well be, but I don't know. But, you know, they're still bound. They're not, they don't have the freedom to move off planet.
So you think he was just up there just
toying around, because they are, in fact, you know, midwares that are not necessarily stuck here by gravity, same sense that we are, but are actually bound by a type of energy, because that energy is electrical in nature, and that keeps them contained within the sphere of electromagnetic, as well as the static nature of our planet. And many other planets. The static is one of the electrodynamic nature of the universe is something that has been not explored by present science, but there is a electric universe group which is doing a lot to expose exactly what our celestial friends told me in terms of the space is not empty. And electrical nature, much of it is, you know, simply put, related to static electricity. So the midwayer's electrical nature has a lot to do with their ability to influence human emotion. And, you know, when they bring to remembrance a negative, you know, somehow they can bring to remembrance a negative, they immediately can jump in and reinforce the negative flow, which is tends to be an emotional response. And that you keep a person away from the divine ascent career. Hmm. Yeah.
Are these midwayers both positive and negative, or are these two different midwayers?
Two different midwayer groups.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you don't know which one you have. If they're trying to convince you of something.
Oh, no, you know. You can know, but you won't know. If they've, you know, put the blinders on you, you just see, instead of the midwayer's influence about you, you'd see what they want you to see, which many times is, you know, the negative influence of an individual in your life. And it wasn't negative. It was their influence, and at their time, imputed negative things in there, and they become very divisive. And this is how they can sow seeds of discord and among what could be a normally good group, because people would overcome a lot of that because just being normal about, you know, putting things behind you. But they have the ability to keep uprooting it and keep reseeding it and re-energizing the negative energies by flowing on that, you know, deploying their energy to keep a person's negative thought train in place. And a person would not see that. They'll see what that person is. They are their target individual. If you're supposed to hate this guy, they'll keep you hating it through, not logic, but through emotional implant and reinforcement of negative until it becomes a divisive tool they can use against many other people. This is one of the problems with radical Islam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, becomes a type of larger weapon. And again, we find it in the Middle East, but the Middle East is where you might be called it the birthplace of these midwayers, you know. There was even a biblical verse about an opening in a bottomless pit about many of these beings having different forms, some of them being kind of like a locust. But there's this more symbolic idea of the locust being, you know, a consumer. They go there and consume everything in this sight, you know, destroy crops, all the good things and all the hard work that farmers did in tending to their field. You see a dark cloud, it was in a cloud, it was locust. Well, in a similar sense, this has been opened up, and we see it in radical Islam. And that is a seed of negative energies and negative influences on real negative emotions. Whether the source is genuine or real, how can a person go up to an innocent person and just say, you have all the right to blow them up? What is that in them that causes that? Well, it's this continual influence by sower of discontent, these midwayers who can, by their electrical nature, influence negative emotion to the point where it can do very, very negative things.
Plus, they can do positive things for us.
Yes.
But it's this this trickery that you're talking about.
Yes, the trickery is something that, you know, what I'm pretty much repeating what the Shahrun was saying in the podcast that we didn't get recorded right, you know, and I'm actually repeating what I've learned from him very recently, like not even an hour ago, but in a sense, it also reflects in my personal experience with seeing their divisiveness in terms of working in an organization, different organizations, especially religious organizations, that look toward the divine ascent. But if they get a hold of a religious organization and impute with their will into it, the religious organization can lose its entire track of the divine ascent. In other words, taking a mortal on an ascent career toward divinity, completely opposite toward just serving the need of a discontented, you know, midware or group of midwares or actual very, very large group of midwares. So there is a war that does take place, not just on our looking at humanity, you know, human beings fighting each other, but it has also something to do with them being influenced and pushed around by some of these, not everything, but some of them are genuinely feeding off of and using the energy, the negative energies that. That's why it's bad to harbor any amount of negative, you know, against any individual thing, because they can be turned around and used as a tool by a midware to turn a person's life from, you know, their divine purpose, the ultimate purpose of their life, away towards some other more negative purpose. That's why unforgiveness is bad, because it still remains as a tool of them, and they can propagate increasing levels of negative emotion, because emotion, again, is electrochemical in nature. And that can be a real shortcoming.
Well, I want to thank Kathleen again for transcribing some of that podcast 295, which is on the listen page. And when she wrote to me saying that she was in the process, I, in my letter back to her, that's when I told her about Riley, and she wrote back to me and said, "Hi, Curtis, that's quite a surprising announcement. I know you got to know Riley very well and must be feeling a sense of loss at his passing. I never met him, but I felt a sense of loss when I read your words. It looks like this year is already living up to Michael's words with the passing of Riley. It seems the strong ending of one chapter and the quite new beginning of another." And she closes, "Much comfort to you, Curtis. Take good care. Love and joy, Kathleen." And another letter about Riley from Mike in Utah. "Remembrance of Riley." And Mike goes way back from the beginning. "Hello, Curtis. Hope all is well with you and yours. Things here are all right, but am anxious to have spring come again. The cold has gotten old. I enjoyed the show, which reflected on Riley's life and the interaction that Michael had with him. It's always nice to hear of their experiences, which have a tendency to cheer me up. By the sound of your comments regarding Riley, it is apparent that you hold a lot of resentment and bitterness toward the space cowboy. Keep in mind, Curtis, none of us are perfect. All of us have shortcomings, no exceptions. You have witnessed many things that the average person wouldn't even dream about of being possible, and I'm sure Riley shared stuff with you that only you are privy to. You have seen him draw symbols. You were instrumental in publishing a book of high importance, and perhaps you've seen things of a paranormal nature. I'm also convinced that no one could duplicate the work that Riley was involved with, which I totally agree with, for sure. Anyway, he goes on by saying, think of the thousands and thousands of wayfarers and their families that would not have been had Riley not agreed to do the things he did. You can't imagine the many symbols and elementals that have been entrusted to me. According to Riley, i.e. Tan, I have the greatest number of symbols in my collection to be distributed when the time is right. The magnificence of the work is unparalleled considering the countless hours he spent being the tool through which Tan operated. Riley kept his word. He had a good heart, and yes, he pulled some dumb shit, but don't we all? I admonish you, Curtis, to let go of the bitterness and don't kick a dead man. It will only bring you down. Focus on the positive instead of the shortcomings of a mortal being. It would make this world a much better place for all of us. Please find attached a couple of elementals of many, many I am honored to have. There are more to life than we are aware of. I'm sorry, there is more to life than we are aware of. The colors are far more fluorescent on paper, but you get the idea. May peace and love embrace you, dear brother. Best wishes to all. Signed, Mike. Thank you very much, Mike. It's hard to lose Riley. I wish he would have not had alcohol in his life. He would have just been a wonder to live with or be around. Even his parole officer brought a bottle of apple wine that I heard was just horrible effects. But some people really have a problem with alcohol. And I can read another one. Mike? Michael?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, from Nedim, 19 January. Subject is thoughts on Riley. With the passing of Riley, I just wanted to share my thoughts on his life and what he meant to me and probably many of the listeners. When I first heard Riley's story back in 2007, I was at a point in my life where I was in searching mode with not a clear direction of where to go, but a true desire to grow spiritually. Finding out about Riley just clicked with me so deeply that it almost seemed familiar in a way. I said to myself, this was it. I finally found it. And then finding out about Michael and the Urantia book, it's as if all the puzzles fell into place. The Celestials told you that there was only one ticketer, and now he has passed away. For all the issues surrounding his life, he was still a good man to his listeners and helped guide many like myself toward greater truth. I am fortunate enough to have gotten a chance to speak with him and get to know Hello Earth and you guys. He will always be in my thoughts. And his last paragraph. I know there is a paradigm shift about to happen. I can feel the stress in my own life, and although find comfort in getting to know and understand my adjuster. Whenever I listen to Hello Earth show, it fills me with true hope and drive to achieve the destiny we are meant to achieve. I will miss Riley, and I'm so thankful to have found all of this in my life. Signed, Nedim. Thank you very much for that, Nedim. That was beautiful. And then, should I read the next one? This is something totally different. Or do you want to comment, Michael?
It's self-explanatory.
Yeah, self-explanatory. And then Jay from Urantia, or broadcasturantia.com, he writes a quick little note. Subject is trumpet sounds from the sky. Hey, Curtis, have you seen this? Maybe Michael could comment about this. And there's a link, a YouTube little video, which involves talking a little bit about Coast to Coast, and Linda Moulton Howe was talking about it. And wondering what these sounds really are, not only from this country, but other countries. Signed, Hope All Is Well, Jay. Okay, there you are.
You ever hear any of those songs?
Yes, I listened to that today. I've never heard anything by my, I've never witnessed it for myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but many times these songs are ducted songs from long, far away. But other times the sounds are, can find no other source. For me, I've heard all kinds of strange sounds because of just the nature of acoustics. There are times in which sound can travel very, very well a long distance and almost find themselves amplified. But there are other times in which you can't really find a source for it. And this is the ones they're talking about, that strange sounds, almost unrecognizable. But some of them sound very familiar. One of the sounds I heard recorded sounded exactly like a shofar. The shofar is a ram's horn, and it's kind of got a squeaky resonance to it. And it doesn't hold a beautiful tone like a brass trumpet or trombone or French horn or something like that, which has a really nice tone to it. But this is more like a kind of a sound. And I was wondering about that. What could cause such a sound? But there is a nature of all kinds of acoustics that are able to be propagated and recorded. And once it's recorded, you know that it was an actual physical wave, acoustic wave, from some position. But one of the interesting things about this sound is that it can find no direction. In other words, it comes from everywhere. How does it do that? The only way it can do that, it has to come from a long distance away and not necessarily have, you might say, the problem with a point of origin, which means that as it goes farther from its point of origin, it gets weaker. If it is a blanketed, it might say a very large area of origin, which would probably be in the troposphere between a dynamically charged area. Then you can have a type of vibration created, different pressure waves being created. And that can be created by just energies, whether they be pressure energies or acoustic energies that are being transformed from the electrical or electromagnetic nature to a mechanical nature. This is all speaker's work, or all sound can be generated indirectly by motivating a physical object, which could very well be differences in pressure in the atmosphere, different layers. But what would and could create such a thing is gotta be an influence that creates its interaction between maybe one or more other sources impinging upon a particular point. And that would create a type of nodal energy, knot, you might say, in the energies that come together and then actually force this confusion of it, pressures. And then it would create a sound, a very loud sound. Where would that come from? We have to continue to be aware that these sounds were heard at different intervals, then it went silent for a couple of years. Not so commonplace, and then it's picking up again. So that tells me something, that the influence, or the one that is creating this sound, is got a kind of a periodicity to it, a cycle to it, and that would be off-planet, something orbiting, you might say. Could that very well be some exoplanet, big planet, Planet X? Probably something in that nature. Does it have to be seen? We just went through a discussion concerning the electrical nature of the in-betweeners, these midway creatures, kind of in between purely material to a semi-material being, but in being able to affect and influence on the material realm, and even human emotion. Similar sense may be coming about through the interaction between unseen pressure that could very well be coming from our own sun or from deep out from outer space. And I can't really say for sure what it could be, except to know that these things were seen before some very significant changes happened on the planet, whether it be the flood, whether the great flood, or there have been times in which the Israelites were, when the sun stood still, these kinds of events, which are documented worldwide. So we could be looking towards some kind of a forced paradigm shift. You know? So these could well be real harbingers of something that could be taking place in the near future, where we could have very, very drastic changes in weather. Greta, she said, that was the biggest snowstorm you've been through?
I think so.
Really? I mean, you lived over there your whole life in New Jersey, right?
I know, but when I was a kid, the snow pile, it looked much higher. Because I was only so high, but I hear it was the largest snowstorm New York has ever had.
Wow.
So they're going to be digging out for a long time. They're going to be, because they got to find a place to put the snow. Well, they have the two rivers, the Hudson and the East River, to dump it in, but still they have to put it in a truck and drive it there.
Yeah, and this is happening, you know, you're right in the effect of these changes, it could very well be related to the sounds, because you can see apparently special, absolutely, you know, special weather phenomena that is unusual, record-setting, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the theoretical climatologists that have, they're not mainstream, are looking at a second or a very, what would be a mini ice age coming about. And it would first, that mini ice age would first be preceded by a warming event and then this sudden cooling event, where exactly what you said would happen, except maybe further north where the snow will not actually melt. You don't have the chance for the snowpacks to melt, and then you create this you know, new glacier type effect. And that's something that could happen, you know, because it's happened before in the mini ice age. What caused it could have been the effect of Planet 7X. I'm looking at Planet 7X as something that is one of the best explanations for many of the strange phenomena that has come about. And go look it up on YouTube, Planet 7X, and it'll be quite informative. It's different from Nancy Leader's Planet X, because she follows a lot of the stuff of the Sumerians, the dictates, which were not necessarily translated perfectly. So it'd be better to take a look at Planet 7X.
Okay.
Yeah.
Planet 7X.
Yeah. What he did was the period between the interactions. One of the things, before I say that, was when I was sitting in front of the monitoring things, you go and sit in front, it's like big screen TVs, you know, but just face the wall, and the wall turns on, and all of a sudden you get all these images that are being shown to you, and some of them had to do with planetary changes. Looking at them, you know, it's like, okay, I kind of know this, I know this. But one of the things they mentioned to me about, I looked at orbits and stuff, kind of understood it. They said, you know, the ones you don't, the ones that will worry you, you should be concerned about, are ones that are their period is irregular. And this is where, you know, something influences its orbit all the time. And according to Planet 7X's author, he looks at the arrival and departure of this Planet 7X as being on a shorter cycle. One moment.
Okay, maybe Michael Menai should pause. But we'll just hold on for a second and sound like something fell over or something.
No, somebody knocked on the door.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Brought over my some paperwork. Anyway, this is about, you know, getting that point across concerning the horning, the horns, the sounds that are coming from the sky, and the snow coming up in heaps and piles. One of the things is the strange wobble in the jet stream. And one of the things that Nancy Leader talked about in Zeta Talk was the wobble of the planet, our planet. And one of the influences that is much easier to wobble than the entire planet is its lighter parts, starting with the atmosphere. And the tropospheric movement would be that jet, where the jet stream run is just at the edge of the troposphere, and moves to the stratosphere right at that point, you know. So that wobble with that wave moving up and down in different angles, you know, it's interesting that it has made climate change apparent because of this kind of wobble of this jet stream, which has a lot to do with the cooling of large areas of continental North America. It was in Europe at one time, and it moved back. Depends on the cycle of the wobble. But what is causing the wobble? That's the question.
I saw how the jet stream was up and down, like a wobble.
Like a wobble, exactly.
Or almost like a stream just flowing down a hill. It never seems to go straight. It always seems to serpentine a little bit.
Well, there was a time in which, you know, it was very predictable. And during World War II, the Japanese had a weapon they used, which was a kind of a neat balloon bomb. You know, and they'd send the balloons up, and then they'd go up to a certain point, and then they had timers on it that would kind of release it down lower until it kind of like bombed. So the bombs did land in, you know, pastures where nobody was. Maybe they blew up a cow or two. But it used the jet stream, you know. Because it was very, what was something that they could figure out. They actually figured it out.
Well, we always look forward to your comments from the listeners. And I want to say sorry to Shaharon for losing about 10 minutes of what we recorded earlier.
Yeah. Tried to bring forward what he tried to get across, which was related to the midwares' ability to influence our behavior through emotion. Negative emotions are what they play on. Yeah. So it's not good to harbor anything like that. Yeah. And that was the greatest weapon, not to have forgiveness, you know, against them, because the more important your position in toward the enlightenment or the purpose of life, and if you've got the definition of the purpose of life, they want to keep that away from the general public. They will send in, sometimes you might call them the more troublesome bunch. I don't know what you would call them, but they are very, very insidious in their behavior.
So, midwares are mostly good, or they can go either way?
They're either one or the other. But you can tell, definitely you can tell, if a midware is in service to God, you might say, then they are, they tend to be better, but sometimes they're allowed to bring circumstances about to turn you away from an errant behavior. Something that is going to only end up in probably only end up in bad. Yeah, so sometimes their action may not seem friendly, but it was for a purpose. But all along, they're trying to teach you. Those that are trying to dissuade you will continually plague you, like pesky fly that keeps flying around you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we could continue next week.
Okay. Very good.
Say aloha, and I'll save this one and get it posted soon.
Okay.
Okay. Aloha, Michael.
All right. Aloha. Bye.
Bye.